All right, be honest. All you people with COVID, you're all faking it. Everybody's got it all of a sudden. Something's going on here. Something's up. Everyone. And by the way, if you get sick, does it have to be a big deal anymore? Do we have to put out a tweet? Do we have to call? Does Eric Adams have to let Channel 11 know he's sick and quarantining? Can he just be sick? Ed Koch used to get a cold. Didn't make a big deal out of it. Is that how it's going to be from now on? Anytime anybody's sick, the CEO of a company has to put out a major statement. Everyone's got to get worried. Everyone's got to get tested. Everyone's got to. No, just get over it. I did. I was a little sick over the weekend. I didn't make a big deal out of it. I just stayed in bed. Well, actually, I did tweet about it. Come to think of it, I tweeted like six times about it. But I was just going through my own personal tale of woe. I was just narrating my sickness experience, I should say. I actually don't mind being sick. What did I have? Some sort of stomach thing. I was, whatever. It wasn't COVID. And I feel great right now. Drank some extra liquids, a little bit of Jell-O, a little bit of ice cream, and some vitamin C, and presto change-o, I'm back at work. Everything's fine. But I don't want to wear a mask, quarantine, all that stuff. I think it was all a little bit overblown. It's still a little bit overblown. And Fauci basically admitted over the weekend, yeah, it was a little bit overblown. Some people are going to get sick. Others won't. Some people are going to get sick and die. I'm sorry, but it happens. It's interesting now that he wants to party, that he wants to have a good time. He's not ordering anybody to stay home anymore.
Well, at this point, really, it's up to the individual to make that evaluation for his or her own safe sense of wellness. However, concomitant with that, he used the word concomitant.
Like, it's kind of a fancy word for at the same time, simultaneously, along with, concomitant. He's supposed to be a master communicator. He's not. He always confuses the issue. He always leaves everybody dizzy with scratching their head. I think, finally, he's out of the picture. We don't need him anymore. Yesterday, they asked him, what is the level of concern you have?
Well, it really, at this juncture,
I got to find it and play it for you. And he talks all about, if you follow the CDC guidance, and they're talking about the CDC for 20 minutes, and nobody actually mentions what is the CDC guidance anymore. They don't, whatever guidance it is, and they were talking about the CDC and that they have guidance. But what is that guidance? You're on your own. You can go to the CDC website and figure that out for yourself. What else? I saw a doctor. I'm totally fine. And I heard something interesting that's going on in the medical community. It's totally not traumatizing, but it's annoying doctors, and it's getting in the way of healthcare. This whole pronoun thing, you know, his, her, they, them, me, she, we, it's getting in the way of healthcare. So you have to fill that out on a form. You know, it used to be Mr. or Mrs., sex, that's about it. It's about 75 questions, your orientation, this, that, and the other thing, what you were born as, sex-wise, what you identify as, sex-wise, what you are now, sex-wise. They don't ask religion anymore. Now, that used to be something they asked. Now, it's appropriate that they don't. What does my religion have to do with the health care? Well, actually, it does have something to do with your health care, right? A certain faith might be okay with this and not okay with that. It's something to keep in mind if you're a physician, potentially. Certain sensitivities, right, about diet, who knows? I think that gives you more of a sense of the person, or at least it used to, because America has become, what's the word, irreligious, more and more irreligious. We're less religious than ever before, more secular than ever before. But have you noticed, as we become more secular, and I don't like that, by the way, and actually, And I hope you've been on this journey with me. As the world gets more and more secular and foolish, I find myself drawn closer to God. And you can get there through the Bible. And it's very easy. You know, I was on the way to work today, and I don't take the subway anymore. Thanks a lot, de Blasio. Thanks a lot, Adams. You blew it. You really did. You convinced a bunch of people that the cops were the enemies. And now, look, you happy? You satisfied? It's crazy down there underground. No, I'm not taking the subway. That used to be my thing. I'm a tough guy. I can handle anything. Well, you know what? Now I'm a tough guy, but I'm not a dumb guy. And I can afford a cab. I can afford the Uber, although I really hate Ubers. I like cabs. I don't like Ubers. No offense, Uber guys. But anyway, I'm in the cab. And, you know, I can look at my phone or I can look at the television that they play right in your face. I'm not going to look at my phone. I'm going to just be mindful. Oh, nope. The TV comes on and it's Sam Champion. You know, the weather guy, Sam Champion, and nothing against Sam Champion. He seems like a great guy and he knows his weather. But I found myself listening to Sam Champion go through every, you know, what it's going to be like in the morning and the afternoon and then tomorrow and then some front out in Louisiana and what that's going to do and the speed and then what difference does it make? I have no control. And quite frankly, it's not going to impact anything. I'm not going on vacation anytime soon. If I want to know what the weather situation is, I can find out very, very quickly, a lot more efficiently, oh, by the way, than listening to Sam Champion. No offense to Sam Champion. And a lot of people want to know all that stuff. And a lot of people are going on vacation and they want to know what's going on in Louisiana and the front and all that stuff. So that's, you know, Sam has his place. And but at the same time, like, why am I not using this time more productively? Anyway, you know what I'm going to say. Maybe you don't. But it is a beautiful time to take out your phone because you can put anything you want on the phone. The phone is just a medium, right? I listened to a beautiful podcast by a guy named Charles Stanley. And Charles Stanley, you've heard me talk about him, a minister in Atlanta, the Charles Stanley Life Principles Bible. What I'm saying is this, we spend our time on a lot of stupid stuff, me especially, watching the dumb shows, looking at the dumb apps, worrying about stuff that's not going to be helped by worrying, anxious about office politics. Oh, no, what's going to happen? Who's up? Who's down? How do I get ahead? Me. Well, how do I get away from all that stress? Oh, I'll just watch something. I'll just watch Sam Champion. Nice guy. Again, I like Sam. Nothing against him. But in those moments, if you can, if you think about it, why not get closer to the master of the universe, the one who created you, created me, created planet Pluto, created what's a faraway galaxy, X96 galaxy, all of that stuff. He cares about each and every one of us, and that's kind of an amazing thing. I can get closer to him, or I can watch Sam Champion. What do you think? Now, there's a time and a place for Sam Champion. But, you know, if it's not Sam Champion, then what is it? Is it Debbie Freeze? who's another one? Mike Woods? Oh, well, hey, I love my Mike Woods. Mike's a great guy. You ever see him on Channel 5? Him and Rosanna, they are awesome people. I got to catch up with him. I haven't talked to those guys. I talked to Rosanna last month, but anyway, no disrespect to anybody, but I hope that makes sense. And it was a wonderful experience turning off Sam Champion and getting closer. Now, of course, yes. Oh, boy. Wow. Why would I want to get closer? Because of all that stupid stuff I did. Oh, boy. He doesn't want anything to do with me. Ay, ay, ay. I'm just going to do my thing, and you know, I don't want to bother him because he knows what an imbecile I've been over the years. Well, if you're like me, that means you need him more than anything, all right? If you've made those mistakes, he knows it. He's already forgiven you. He already knows what you're going to do. He's there for each and every one of us, and I highly recommend it. All right, did you see the Trump rally over the weekend? Chances are you didn't because, well, he's being shadow banned in big ways and small. Fortunately, Newsmax carried him live, and let's see what he did. I watched the whole thing. It was fantastic. Cut two, please.
You could take the five worst presidents in American history and put them together, and they would not have done the damage Joe Biden has done to our country in just 15 months. Russia's outrageous invasion of Ukraine would never have happened if I was in the White House, and not even a chance. Under our administration, America was strong and America was respected because you had a president who always put America first.
All right. I love it. Don't you? That's great stuff. That is great stuff. And it was a great rally. He obviously, look, he has got a great case. The country is going down the tubes, and he's the one who can fix it. Everything he said that would happen has happened bad. How can they take it from him? Why would they try to take it from him? I mean, other Republicans, they're going to have to get out of the way. He's the man. Now, it drives Democrats crazy. They're going to have to they're going to vilify him, worse than vilify him. They're going to try to say he is everything they said the last time. What else can they say about him? Seriously, next thing they'll have to say, he's an alien. He's from some other planet. I mean, they already said he's a Russian spy, and that didn't work. That wasn't true. Now they're trying to say he's a terrorist. He's an insurrectionist. That's not true. That's not going to stick. That doesn't work. January 6th doesn't work. We all saw it with our own eyes. The legal system is even finally waking up. Did you see that? What happened? The guy was found not guilty. He was at the Capitol, didn't harm anybody, didn't break anything. And he said, well, the cops let me in. And guess what? We've seen video of the cops letting people in. The guy didn't think he was trespassing. Why would you are you trespassing if a cop says, yeah, you can walk here? Right this way, sir. Well, that's not trespassing. Not guilty. Not guilty. Good for him. I think there's going to be more of that. There should be more of that. All right. So when I started out earlier about how the country has become irreligious, but people, I do believe, have a longing for order. They have a longing for rules and custom. And the rules and customs of the church, of religion, of God, those are beautiful. And they're actually meant to enhance your freedom, enhance your joy, make your life better. They are. We don't look at it that way normally. The world doesn't want us looking at it that way. Oh, gee, I don't want anything to do with that. I want to have a good time. That's all going to rain on my parade. It's not, actually. But, well, the woke left, they need something to worship. They need something to devote themselves to, and it's their own corrupt ideology. This trans stuff is their latest endeavor. First it was race, now it's trans. Actually, Black Lives Matter was a lot about trans, even before race, if you look it up on their website. Anybody hear of Northwell Medicine, right? Northwell. That's like one of the major healthcare providers in the world. It's not some fly-by-night clinic in Berkeley, California. This is real deal stuff. Well, they want all of their physicians to know it's Black Maternal Health Week. Black Maternal Health Week? Yes. This is a little ditty by Senator Kamala Harris. She came up with this. Black Maternal Health Week. And now Joe Biden made it official. And listen to this. Across the United States, in New York State, and within our own Northwell Health System, we need to raise awareness and make strides in improving maternal outcomes with a priority on understanding and eliminating disparities in maternal outcome. Maternal outcome, okay? The Nation. Headliner, The Nation. President Joseph Biden issued a proclamation signed April 13, 2021, declaring April 11th through 17th, that's right now, as Black Maternal Health Week. In that proclamation, President Biden called upon all Americans, that's me, to raise awareness of the state of Black maternal health in the United States by understanding the consequences of systemic discrimination, recognizing the scope of this problem and the need for urgent solutions, amplifying the voices and experiences of Black women, families, and communities, and committing to building a world in which Black women do not have to fear for their safety, their well-being, their dignity, and their lives before, during, and after pregnancy. You see, is it as obvious to you as it is to me? They're blaming on whatever problems they want to eradicate. They're blaming them on race. Race. When you focus on that, you will miss the cause of the real problem. Black women are approximately 3 times more likely to die from birth complications compared to white women. White women even come off as the, somehow, as they're the perpetrators of this. They're the ones making this happen. Some hospital PR team wants to rearrange the world, correct all of the ills that plague us with a silly memo during a phony baloney week. We've got real problems. We could look for real solutions, or we could all go around trying to feel good about doing something and scaring others who might disagree with us. There's more in this. I'll be right back.
This is the Greg Kelly Show.
You know, that letter really is a doozy. Again, it'd be one thing if it came... It would be one thing if it was some silly clinic, again, in some nutjob liberal neighborhood. But this is Northwell. Anybody give me an idea? How big is Northwell? I mean, it's tremendous. It's one of the largest healthcare providers in all of America, and they're peddling this nonsense. Now, you could say, well, wait a second, Greg. I mean, these are real numbers, right? These are real problems, right? You know, illness is a problem. Illness is a problem. Since when do you blame the race of the patient for the problem? Or the race of the person who is cured of the disease with that problem? They seem to be laying some serious guilt on white women here. Here's something, some paraphernalia they put out. If you're a Black woman with an advanced degree, you're more likely to die from childbirth complications than a white girl who has not completed the 8th grade. Wow. Black woman versus a white girl. I'm uncomfortable with this, actually. I sense a lack of respect. There's something demeaning about this dialogue. Do you? Am I being overly sensitive? Now, I'm sensitive because they are missing the problem. They're missing the real problem. Let's see here. Black women are approximately 3 times more likely to die from childbirth complications compared to white women. And then they drop it there. You see, it must be discrimination. It must be racial discrimination. And remember, if they can't prove bias, they'll just blame it on implicit bias. I think they're about to get there. More from Northwell. There is also a growing body of evidence from disparities linked to structural racism. Oh, here we go. And implicit racial bias that have been woven into the societal and healthcare system culture for decades. Given the complex mix of factors causing severe maternal morbidity, reducing its prevalence and closing the racial and ethnic disparities will require a multi-pronged and sustained effort. Okay, well, what is some nurse supposed to do about this at Northwell Hospital? Huh? Wait a second. Given the complex mix of factors causing severe maternal morbidity. What is maternal morbidity? Does that mean, forgive me, but does that mean fat women? No, it can't mean that. Can it? I don't know. I'll look it up in a second. But they have a solution to this. Oh, here we go. As a response, New York State has partnered with all birthing hospitals.
What?
Through the New York State Birth Equity Improvement Project. Now, does that sound like out of George Orwell or what? The New York State Birth Equity Improvement Project. To identify how individual and systemic racism both impact birth outcomes and take action to improve both the experience of care, prenatal outcomes. Again, the nice language is mixed with a very dark and spooky language. They're trying to trick us. I'll be right back.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pile-ups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
You're listening to The Greg Kelly Show.
Hey, a timeout from that silly letter. By the way, yes, you know, I think morbidity. I remember they talked about during COVID, comorbidities. I always think of what I used to be, technically on the chart, morbidly obese. We're talking about fatality and mortality. But, hey, real quick, Dr. Oz was endorsed by President Trump over the weekend. Cut one, Donald Trump endorsing Mehmet Oz.
By the way, I endorsed another person today, Dr. Oz in Pennsylvania. Dr. Oz. Great guy. Good man. Good man. Harvard educated. Tremendous, tremendous career. And they liked him for a long time. That's like a poll. You know, when you're in television for 18 years, that's like a poll. That means people like you. But he's a great guy. This is the year we're going to take back the House. We're going to take back the Senate, and we're going to take back America. And in 2024, most importantly, we are going to take back our beautiful, beautiful, beautiful White House.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful indeed. I really like that he endorsed Oz. Dr. Oz is kind of like what the founding fathers had in mind, and so is President Trump. And here's what I mean by that. They did not envision a permanent government class like we have right now. Career politicians, Joe Biden would horrify them. All right. Everybody who signed that Declaration of Independence, who helped write the Constitution, these guys were actually part-time government officials in creating our government. They had farms. They had one was a bookmaker. They made candles. They did all kinds of things. They weren't these full-time technocrats. They had lives outside of government. And I think that part of the thinking was, you know, you had talents, real-world talents, and you would bring those talents and experiences to Washington, or back then I guess it was Philadelphia for a little while, or even New York, and share those gifts, talents, and experiences with your country to enhance the country, to make it a better place. Now, you think Joe Biden has talents and gifts that he's bringing to you and making America a better place? Of course not. He doesn't know how to do anything. All he knows how to do is make that big smile, that big phony smile, say things that sound good, ask for favors, ask for money, and give it to Hunter or take it from Hunter. It's just these guys they bring nothing to the table. And Trump and Oz are very much alike. They are outsiders. They have world-class talent in their fields. Trump is a builder, marketer. Dr. Oz is a physician, and yes, as a television host. This is somebody who can open up your chest, hook it up to a heart-lung machine, take out the aorta or the ventricle or however the hell it works, clean it all out, change it up, and you can walk out of that hospital someday. Well, they'll put you in a wheelchair at first. Why do they insist on doing that still? And even if you can walk, they put you in the wheelchair the day you're leaving the hospital. But he can do that. And Donald Trump can build a building from scratch. He can. Most people can't install a sink. I can't install a sink. He can install 1,500 sinks. Look at the old Commodore Hotel. I mean, you may say, oh, it's just stupid stuff, Greg. I mean, buildings are built. No, this is real world stuff. That's real world talent. Any nitwit can sit in their computer, any hipster, and say snarky crap that does not benefit anybody. If you can repair a shoe, you can make this world a better place. Anyway, that's what I like about Oz. He can, I'm sure he can repair a shoe, but he can repair your heart. And he's learned some magnificent things along the way about the healthcare system, and I think he has a lot to offer our country and the United States Senate, the people of Pennsylvania. So that's a very, very big endorsement. And keep an eye on that. We're going to take back the House and Senate. You got to take back these tough races. That's going to be one of them. Good luck to Dr. Oz. Congratulations to Donald Trump. Excellent choice. Back to the Northwell letter. Black women are approximately three times more likely to die from birth complications compared to white women. There is also a growing body of evidence for disparities linked to structural racism and implicit racial bias that have been woven into the societal and healthcare system culture for decades. Now, she says there is a growing body of evidence. What the hell is that? The 1619 Project? Northwell. That's probably what they're thinking. They're citing nothing. A growing body of evidence about implicit racial bias. Go ahead and look up that implicit racial bias research. It's not there. And even if it is there, if implicit racial bias is a thing, how do you fix that? You can't. It might be hardwired into everybody. And it's not bias. It's like something you're eyeballed. It's just ridiculous stuff. There are so many more important things to focus on, like greatness. Here we are just bent over backwards trying to not offend anybody or trying to get points for sounding like we're racial justice warriors, social warriors. Now, these are real problems. Yes. Let's see here. If you want to break it down this way, there are some people who are dying who shouldn't be dying. You're going to blame it on something that's happening in the Northwell healthcare system? Maybe we should go back and look at what Barack Obama was saying about fathers in the black community. Something tells me that he had much better advice, much more applicable advice than anything that Nicole Hannah-Jones has come up with in the 1619 Project, which has been debunked. When are they going to issue the correction on that? When are they going to admit that that is all a bunch of nonsense? Or are they too afraid of the monster that they have created in Nicole Hannah-Jones? There's that too. Let's see here. Given the complex mix of factors causing severe maternal morbidity, reducing its prevalence and closing the racial and ethnic disparities will require a multi-pronged and sustained effort. As a response, New York State has partnered with all birthing hospitals through the New York State Birth Equity Improvement Project. That damn near sounds like a death panel. To identify how individual, that means you, and systemic racism, that means you and your boss, both impact birth outcomes and take action to improve both the experiences of care and prenatal outcomes for black birthing people. I almost forgot. Birthing people? Birthing people. It's... I know. I used to blow it off when they talked about the war on Christmas because I thought it was a bit of a joke. I'm like, I'm okay. We're still free to celebrate. This is round two. They're not messing around. They're changing the language. I'm here trying to say that we should still call mothers mothers, and I feel like I'm out on a limb. Northwell. Over the past few years, Northwell has taken a pledge to combat racism. Oh, isn't that good of you? Wow. Let's give Northwell a big round of applause. Isn't that amazing? good for you guys. That's just really, you guys took that oath? Where do I take this pledge? I pledge to combat racism and inequities in underserved and underrepresented communities. Oh, I feel so good about myself. I feel so good about myself. Oh, but there's a catch. Unfortunately, despite the educational achievement of black birthing people, mothers, you maniacs, inequities in health and birthing outcomes remain disparate. One of the key action items by Northwell has been to address the inequities, for black birthing people. So, what are we going to do? We're going to make a week, awareness week. How do we fix real problems with phony solutions like awareness week? Yes, the 5th annual Black Maternal Health Awareness Week. And Northwell will team together. Ooh, and there's more. They're launching a Center for Maternal Health. And it will be virtual. Oh, yes, 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 yes. We created an app for that. There's an app. The virtual center will be a repository of the multiple population and community health-based initiatives. Community health-based initiatives. That's code for, look at all this money we gave to a bunch of crummy groups. Look at all this money we spread around to buy off everybody. I'm sure they have some sort of an alliance with the National Action Network. I love to decode this. This is fun. Developed to support the clinical efforts of the obstetric care team with the vision of identifying birthing people at high risk for poor outcome earlier and improving the trajectory of their pregnancy with continued support for the family in the postpartum period. Hey, you want to go do that? Just go do it. All right? Just look for unhealthy poor people and help them who are pregnant. You got to make all this announcement and shame white people? Oh, the white girls. White girls versus black. You want everybody at each other's throats? You want to know why people are now looking at each other with hostility when 8 seconds ago there was harmony in this city, in this country? Let's see. Vision identifying. Oh, yeah, this is a guy I got to follow up with. Dr. Michael Nimeroff. To quote our chairperson, Dr. Michael Nimeroff, the high rate of severe material health problems among black women is a complex, multivariate issue, and we know it will take a complex, multi-layered approach to address this health inequity. This is a learning process, and Northwell, Katz's Women's Hospital, will continue to adapt as needed. We are in this effort for the long haul. Sincerely, two people. Oh, wait a second. There's more. No. Oh, wait. Maybe I should. Can I log into this thing? To kick off Black Maternal Health Week, please join Dr. Karen, somebody or other, Dr. Adrian, someone else, Dr. Monique, someone, and Dr. Keisha tonight. Monday, April 11th at 7 p.m. for a discussion on how the health systems fight bias and improve outcomes in our community. I gotta get on that one. I gotta see about all this bias. I know all those doctors and nurses. They're discriminating against those black birthing people. They always have been. Even the black doctors and nurses. I know they have it in for those black birthing people. Don't you? Now, who the hell gets credit for this? No one, really, other than I think the pressure is kind of let off Northwell. They feel immune to criticism. That's what people are looking for, immunity to the criticism, to the heat. I haven't totally processed it. Let me get you in here for a second. Let's see here. Doug is on the phone from Long Island. Doug, yes?
Hello, Greg. How are you today?
Fine.
fine. Well, I just want to thank you for making me aware of this during the Holy
What?
Religion, which is 50% of the country of the world. This is our Holy Week, and they're making this an awareness week for Black mothers, maternal health. Tell them thank you for me.
Tell who thank you?
I guess it's Northwell Health. Maybe I'll walk into one of their walk-in clinics and thank them. I mean, this is just absolutely ridiculous.
Well, I have to urge you, Doug, to use the proper terminology. I think you said Black birthing mothers at one point. Did you say Black mothers? It's Black birthing people.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't get the whole thing. I missed that part of the notation.
All right. Thank you, pal. Thank you, Doug.
Whatever.
Yeah, no, I hear you. It's crazy. It is pretty, pretty wild. Again, I'm still processing it. And here's something. When I go to the doctor, I realize something was going on. My doctor likes to gossip a little bit. And I'm like, yeah, okay. And they're like, hey, did you hear about this? And I'm like, yeah. Okay, what do you think about this person on TV and that person on TV? And I answer the questions and I try to ask him a question. And the whole time I'm thinking, is he ever going to ask me about how I'm feeling? And then he asked me this and that. And it would go on like this. And on like the third visit, I had to say to him, you know, are we doing a little too much chit-chatting? And he said, oh, no. Look, I am actually evaluating you as we talk. I was like, you are? Yes. And there's a whole thing in medicine. You can make assessments. It's a science, but it's also an art. And they're figuring you out as they look at you. They can look at you and make determinations or observations that they may have to follow up on, or, you know, they got to start somewhere. And the way they're making medicine now, it's all about checking the box, checking the box, checking the box. And now we've given them 50 new boxes to check about gender at birth, gender that they're feeling presently, gender that they may be transitioning to, how they want to be referred to, what pronoun to use, and all these ways that you, as a physician, could possibly get into trouble if you deviate from their wishes. That's a problem. That's a big problem. I got to take a quick break. Be right back.
Talk Radio 77 WABC.
Do you believe, as I do, that the invasion of Ukraine would not be happening right now if President Trump were in office? Now, most Americans believe that. It's been polled numerous times. There's a poll out of Harvard University that says that. Most people understand that Putin would not have done this if Donald Trump were still in office. I don't see that poll, and there are actually two or three polls to that effect, getting all that much attention because, well, if you start thinking about it, and you start thinking about what we're seeing and the atrocities and the war crimes and the horror that is war, and war crimes, I hate to say it, happen in basically every single war. They're going to happen. It's almost inevitable. It's not clean. People who haven't been to war don't realize how messy, ugly, and how it must be avoided at all costs unless it's absolutely the last resort. These things happen, but everyone is so many people who haven't fought are oblivious to that. Anyway, we now know how bad it is. We see what they're going through. And imagine that everybody who's dead now would be alive if Donald Trump were in office. How about this? Did you hear about the portable crematoriums? Russia has deployed with portable crematoriums to incinerate. I heard somebody on the news saying they're trying to cover up their atrocities. No, they want those they want that on full display. They're proud of that. They're getting rid of their own bodies, the dead Russians. They're cremating them. Dead soldiers. That's a burden. That's you got to ship them home. It's a logistics nightmare. You ever see the movie Taking Chance? You probably didn't. It was an HBO movie about 15 years ago. Kevin Bacon was in it. It's a movie about a Marine who dies in combat, and there's a tradition. These bodies are escorted. They're never left unattended. First, you got to get them off the battlefield. There are Marines, soldiers, sailors, airmen who have died in combat, in war. They've been shot and killed trying to retrieve the dead bodies of comrades. And that's how important it is. You've got to take everybody home, dead or alive. All right? So you get them off the battlefield. That's job number one. And then you got to get them all the way home. And you can't have, you know, bodies go missing sometimes. They get shipped to the wrong country. All kinds of crazy stuff can happen. So they actually appoint an officer to go with the body all the way to the person's hometown, stays the entire time. Anyway, that movie Taking Chance, I think the it was named Chance, the fallen Marine, and this guy takes him all the way back. They don't do that in Russia. They can't do that in Russia. They're afraid of all those Russian moms. They didn't. What the hell is going on there? They have already lost more Russian soldiers, more Ukraine soldiers than the United States lost in all of Iraq and all of Afghanistan from 2001 to 2021. I want to know if this has totally redefined the geopolitical landscape, whatever, because now we all know that Russia does not have a military of any real consequence. I mean, I know they've got some firepower. They have strategic bombers, but man, did they know how to fly them? Nope. Did anybody think it was going to be this bad? I don't know. All right, so we have that, and we also have, who's the guy who almost killed Ronald Reagan? John Hinckley. John Hinckley is now in his 60s. In 1981, March of 1981, he was a delusional loner obsessed with actress Jodie Foster. He's 24 years old. He took a shot at Ronald Reagan, a couple of shots at him. He almost killed him. He put a bullet in the head of his press secretary, James Brady. Affected his life forever. Nobody died that day, but people later succumbed to their injuries. He was found not guilty by reason of insanity, sent off to St. Elizabeth's Hospital for the Insane, stayed there for, 25, 30 years? He's a rich kid, by the way, John Hinckley. I don't know if anybody understands that, how rich the Hinckley family is and was. So, you know, he played his guitar. He just kind of hung around, and now he's out of the hospital, living at home. I think officially, the Secret Service, does, like, he's unsupervised. He can go wherever he wants, whenever he wants. If there are any restrictions, they are very loose, very permissive. And he's going to come to Brooklyn, New York in July to play his guitar for a paying audience at some silly hipster hotel. I know about it because I saw it on Twitter. A presidential assassin is on Twitter. And President Trump banned for life? Huh? Not only, it's not adding up, but it's all adding up at the same time, if you know what I mean. There's the music. I'll be right back. You know, over the weekend, I heard Trump say, if Joe Biden would just come out and say, everything I did regarding energy is wrong, and I take it all back, and we're going to do everything that Donald Trump wanted to do with energy, with the pipeline. You know, we're going to frack. We're going to get that Keystone pipeline. We're going to drill. We're going to do all that stuff. We're not going to waste our time with the wind and the solar because they're not quite there yet. We're just not there yet. You kill all the birds. If Biden were to do that, Trump said that prices would come down immediately. They would, just right on their own. That admission. You know, the markets are driven by all kinds of things. Just an indication that something is about to happen or going to happen in 6 months. Just the indication, just the news. And I thought for myself, that actually sounds like it could actually work. If Biden were to come out, if he wants to lower gas prices, he could, with his mouth, say, we are going to go back to the Trump era energy independent policies, and that could work. It would work. How about that? He can't because, What is it, a matter of pride? Is it a matter of him being held hostage by this crazy woke left? Is it a matter that he hates Trump so much he would never admit that he's right? I don't know. I don't know, but he could fix it right away. And if he couldn't say it all like that, he could say, look, we gave this cylinder, we gave all this stuff enough of a chance. It's not working out. Hey, why the hell is Valerie Biden writing a book? Hey, who's Valerie Biden? His very seldom seen sister, Valerie. Now, what does she do? What does the sister of Joe Biden do? Well, for much of her life, she was Joe Biden's political, another like a junior cash machine for Joe Biden. She ran all of Joe Biden's campaigns. Now, what skill, what capacity did she have to do that? What is her... she lived under the same roof as Joe Biden when they were kids. They're brother and sister. That's it. It's just like Hunter. Why is Hunter on the Burisma board? Why is he dealing with all these Chinese? Because he's related to Joe. That's it. And Joe wants to be rich, just like all these people. You know, Now it comes to me. I remember Joe Biden spent a lot of time in the Hamptons when he was vice president. A lot of time. Now, I've been out there myself, and I don't know what it is, but when I am in a rich person's house, which I have been, and they're nice, I get bored in about 30 seconds. It doesn't matter after about 30 seconds. 30 seconds later, you're on your phone. Okay, now what? It just doesn't move me like that. I like to... It's kind of a strange story. Never mind. I don't need much to get by. And granted, I was single back then. When you have a family, you need more, you want more. But still, my needs are minimal. I think Joe's needs and appetites are palatial, right? And you start rolling with these billionaires. You start to think, well, I should be a billionaire too. I'm Joe Biden. Vice President of the United States. Now, why is he Vice President of the United States? Because he got lucky when he was 27 years old. 27 years old. Yes, I know he was elected when he was 29. He starts running when he was 27. They needed somebody, anybody, to run against the incumbent. Let's pick that dummy. He'll do it. And about 27,000 people voted for him. That's it. Delaware is about 1/20th the size of Brooklyn. In terms of population, nobody's there. It's a silly nowhere state. And how did he get elected? Well, was it the brilliant political acumen of Valerie? Who knows? But she was running the campaign, and she ran every single campaign, including his ridiculous run for the presidency in 2008. So she's writing a book telling that story. Do we need another Biden book? Let's see. Joe has written two. Jill has written one. Hunter has written one. Now Valerie has written. Has anybody read any of these books? And by the way, I heard the great one, Mark Levin, late last week. Don't catch his show as much as I would like, but boy, oh boy, he's good. I don't like to listen sometimes because it's, well, you know, I'll get to that some other time. But he is an amazing broadcaster, and he's going through it. And it looks like Joe may have played some games with the books. And suddenly, on paper, looks like Joe got very, very rich from a couple of crummy books. You know, politicians don't write very good books, for the most part. They don't. And nobody wants to read a vice presidential memoir. There have been two or three in history that were, like, worth anything. Really. Let me think. Nixon wrote a big one. Six Crises came out after he lost to Kennedy. He had a story to tell. That was interesting for the time. And let's see, who else had? Dan Quayle actually had a pretty good one. People were anxious to see what he had to say after what he had been put through. But was anybody clamoring to read about Dick Cheney's life in the White House, time in the White House? I don't think so. How about Walter Mondale? Did anybody know or care? And Joe Biden had one before. During, what is it called? Promises to Keep, A Charge to Rush, something dumb. Ghostwritten pablum. But if you read between the lines, sometimes you do learn things about the men. And sometimes you just say it out loud. It's kind of wild. He told his father, let me think about this. Hunter Biden is pulled aside by Joe at one point. They're having a man-to-man talk. And this is in Joe's book. And he says to Hunter, Hunter, what do you want to be when you grow up? And Hunter says, I want to be important. And Joe, this is according to the book, just says, I knew what he meant. Just like, I was just astounded by it. Like, what's, okay, now he's going to go into the whole explanation of, well, that's not, you know, we got to refine that goal. Being important in and of itself is not a worthy goal. What are you talking about, son? Wise up here. What do you think is important? The adulation, the headlines, walking into a room and a lot of people want their picture taken with you? Is that what you want? Well, what about doing something that gets you to that position? It's not that. It's like saying you want to be a baker, but all you want to do is lick icing all day long. I don't know. I thought that was just a very sad moment. But that's Joe, and it's a very sad family. There's another book coming out by Valerie Biden. Hey, do me a favor. Let's get Valerie Biden on the show next week. Talk about her book. I'm sure she'll jump at the chance. We'll have her on the Newsmax show, too. She can tell me all about that hellhole she lived in as a child, Garden City, Long Island. Oh, yeah, she did. Yeah. Oh, down on his luck, out of work. Joe Biden Sr. kept his entire family, all the kids, supplied with the latest sports cars. Did you know that? Joe can't make up his. He's always lying. He's always changing the story. His father goes from ne'er-do-well to uber-successful businessman. Why were they living in Garden City? You don't hear that much, right? But they lived in Garden City on Long Island. Joe's dad was in the airport business for a time. Did you know that? Yeah. He was in the airport business. Bought a local airport. Maybe it was Mitchell Field. Maybe it was Roosevelt Field. I don't know. But he was in the airport business. My dad wasn't in the airport business. My dad's dad wasn't in the airport business. He was a milkman, by the way. Most people don't sit around talking about how crummy a businessman their grandfather or father was, even if they were. That's like Joe's brand. That's what he talks about all the time. Anyway, it's just, I shouldn't be surprised anymore. I shouldn't. And I guess none of us should be. So, one more time, Dr. Oz, endorsed by Donald Trump, and I think that's great. Can we hear that one more time, please? Thank you.
By the way, I endorsed another person today, Dr. Oz in Pennsylvania. Dr. Oz. Great guy, a good man, Harvard educated, tremendous, tremendous career. And they liked him for a long time. That's like a poll. You know, when you're in television for 18 years, that's like a poll. That means people like you, but he's a great guy. This is the year we're going to take back the House. We're going to take back the Senate, and we're going to take back America. And in 2024, most importantly, we are going to take back our beautiful, beautiful, beautiful White House.
That's pretty great. That is pretty great. And if you go through that, I don't see how they can lose. I'm sorry. I just don't see how they can lose unless they pull their shenanigans again. Let me hear a little bit more. Something else from the Trump rally Saturday night. This was in Selma, not Alabama, Selma, North Carolina.
And our country is being humiliated by a president who has no idea what the hell is going on. He has no idea what he's doing and no idea what he's saying, actually. Just have to look at what's happening.
All right. Good stuff. More?
You're going to elect an incredible slate of true America First Republicans. Up and down the ballot you will go, and together we are going to end crazy Nancy Pelosi's political career once and for all. She is crazy.
She's crazy. I like the way he said it. He said it kind of crazy. That's fun. More.
Irreversible harm that Democrat politicians did to our young people is unforgivable, and American voters will punish them at the ballot box this November. Despite all you're hearing and seeing of China and Russia and Iran and others, our biggest danger is not from outside coming in. Our biggest single danger is from the sick and radical politicians that are knowingly or unknowingly wanting to destroy our country.
Not wrong. Not wrong at all. Man, we just were waiting for somebody like this who is totally unafraid of speaking out. Why are so many people afraid of speaking the truth? Why is that? That's a great question. So many people are, I think, too, are they lazy? Are they content? Are they too stuck in the system? You know, if you want to be a player in the swamp, you have to buy into all of their philosophies, all of their customs. You got to buy into all of that stuff. And Trump never did. He is an outsider, has been an outsider. You can look back. He is consistent, by the way. Yes, I know there are certain issues that he's evolved on, changed on, but I would say they're not central to his character. They're not central to his approach. You got to look up that Rona Barrett interview from 1980. It's pretty compelling. He talks about life. He talks about his family. He talks about his outlook. And he's very much the same guy at 34 as he is at the age of, what is he now, 70? Is he 76? He's 76. He'll be 76 in June. Flag Day, June 14th. Great day for a birthday. Flag Day. 76 years old. Still got it. Big time. Joe lost. Do we have Joe from Friday? Anything from Friday? Man, oh, man. When he was trying to celebrate Ketanji Brown Jackson, who, by the way, what a piece of work she turned out to be. She said one nice thing the day she was nominated. Then I kind of lost. We have her, too. All right, do me a favor. Here's Joe at that event. Go ahead.
America is a nation that can be defined in a single word. I was in the foothills of the Himalayas with Xi Jinping, traveling with him. And that's, we traveled 17,000 miles when I was vice president. I don't know that for a fact.
Wait, what the hell? He was trying to tell a story. What's the word that America can be defined by? He forgot. Let me hear that again. That's unedited. That's what he sounded like. Oh, my gosh. And you can see Ketanji Brown Jackson puts her head down in shame. She's embarrassed for him. One more time.
America is a nation that can be defined in a single word. I was in the foothills of the Himalayas with Xi Jinping, traveling with him. And that's, we traveled 17,000 miles when I was vice president. I don't know that for a fact.
All right. Now, wait a second. Does he come back to the word? Can we find out if he comes back to the word? Because I've heard him tell this story a million times. Even I know it. The word is possibility. He thinks this is profound. Possibility. You can do anything in America. This is something that Cracker Jack was talking about in 1926. Possibility. All right. Oh, shoot. Is my wife here yet? No? Oh, got to call her. I'll be right back.
Talk Radio 77 WABC.
WABC
is the Greg Kelly Show.
My wife did not call. She didn't call. She just walked into the room and walked out, giving me my lunch. How about that? Thank you so much. What's in here anyway? Pret-a-porter, pret-a-manger. That means ready to eat soup. It's usually either tomato or some green stuff. I hope it's the tomato. It's the tomato! Excellent, excellent, excellent. All right, all is well. Just, I do have to address Ketanji Brown Jackson for a moment. She said one nice thing the day she was nominated. And I'm like, okay, I like her. I like her as a person. I thought I did. She said, look, I got here. There's absolutely no way one can conceive of this happening if it weren't for my faith. And I thought that was really nice. And okay, I didn't. She's just replacing Stephen Breyer, another liberal. Who cares? Knock yourselves out. Number one, the confirmation hearings were totally fine and fair. They were talking about her words, her judgments, her opinions, her records, not stuff she did in high school, you know, not some dude she dated. It was all on the up and up. stuff that you're supposed to be asked and the way they characterize it. Oh, it was a hateful this. It was such an attack. It was sexist. It was racist. No, it wasn't. And then I think that she disappointed me as well a couple of times when she got emotional when Senator Booker started shooting her mouth, crying, and she started crying. And quite frankly, her leniency for those pedophiles, that caught my attention. I'm like, what's up with that? That seems to be something that's consistent. Her refusal to define certain basic terms in the language, like woman. I mean, I'm sorry. Is that going too far out on a limb? What's up with that? So what's really up her sleeve? And then she gets up there on, I guess it was Friday, and she said, you know, it only took a, how many people have served on the Supreme Court? Well, Joe Biden doesn't know because this answer is wrong. How many did Joe Biden say? You got that? Yeah.
And I said, you know, I said, I'm shortly going to go out. Look, I'm looking out the window. I'm going to go out on this, what they call the South Lawn in the White House. And I'm going to introduce to the world, the first African-American woman out of over 200 judges on the Supreme Court.
Well, he got that wrong. it's been on. Now, granted, I guessed that there were 1,000. But I said right now, this is a wild ass, who knows what guess. I guessed 1,000 last week. And I asked somebody to look it up, and they got back to me, and it was 116, I think. 116 people have served on the court. Joe just said it was 200. But she says, here I am, a black woman, and it only took 116 people. They had to nominate 116 white men and a handful of women before they got around to a black woman. I just thought, wow, like as if racism every step of the way is what kept a black woman out of that position. And I don't think one can make that case, actually. I don't. If you look at the numbers of those who are actually available, it was nobody should be kept out, but how many were actually eligible at the time? There's something about it. The whole tenor of this, I don't like. I'm saying it out loud. Now, what else did she say? Go ahead.
We have come a long way toward perfecting our union. In my family, it took just one generation to go from segregation to the Supreme Court of the United States.
That's great. That's great. It's not the first time. It's just, are we going to bring up everything this country did wrong whenever it does something good? When we landed on the moon, did we talk about the Titanic sinking? You know, the International Space Station. Do we remind everybody about the Apollo 1 mishap every time? You know, I don't know if that. Artie in Delray, hi.
Hey, Greg, how are you?
Fine.
How are you? Hey, you watched that video with those three cops with the Ashley Babbitt situation?
Yeah.
Like, that 100% proves that there was no threat of deadly imminent danger. This like I said, this boils my blood, man. What the heck is going on? Nobody knows about it. I know you broadcasted quite often, but a lot of people don't know who Ashley Babbitt is, and to me that's the worst sacrifice to our country is what went on there.
You know, Artie, I'm glad you called, and I'm glad you said that, because I've never really looked at it that way, but I always found it very suspicious that they walked off. But the way you put it, if it were so deadly, if it were so dangerous, well, why would they walk off? That's proof that it wasn't deadly, that it wasn't dangerous. Very interesting, Artie, and I thank you. Be right back.
WABC. You're listening to The Greg Kelly Show.
Looking at some of what President Trump touched on at that rally, he also called out, he wants a Republican majority of Congress. They must investigate the collusion between Democrat Party politicians and the teachers' unions. to keep our children out of school for no scientific reason whatsoever. The irreversible harm that Democrat politicians did to our young people is unforgivable, and American voters will punish them at the ballot box this November. I love it. Let's see here. A Republican Congress must stand up for parental rights and parental choice. I think that's a good idea, President Trump said. No teacher should ever be allowed to teach far-left gender theories to our children without parental consent. It's truly child abuse, plain and simple. By replacing reading and math with pronouns and gender studies, our government-run education system has forfeited the trust of American parents, and they really have. Every mom and dad in America must be given the right to opt out of the indoctrination and send their child to the public, private, charter, or religious school of their choice. Have to do it. He also said this: we will stop illegal government discrimination. We will restore the sacred American principle of equality under the law. And we will, while we're at it, demand justice for the January 6 prisoners and full protection of their rights, like was received by Antifa and Black Lives Matter, who murdered people through our country. And as you probably have heard, one of the first January 6 trials ended in an extortion. I think he meant to say an acquittal. It was a horrible thing they were doing to people. But exoneration. There was an exoneration because effectively proved that he got waved into the Capitol by the police. And there was this, too. And people forget it. And the January 6th committee never talks about it. That thing should be illegal. Those people should be arrested. The January 6th committee. Remember this. Nancy Pelosi was in charge of the Capitol. You know that, right? And the mayor of D.C., they were in charge of all security in the Capitol. Remember also that they were offered 3 days before, on January 3rd, 10,000 soldiers or National Guard to protect the Capitol. They turned it down. If they would have accepted that they're in charge of it, we offered it. If they would have accepted, there would have been no January 6th as we know it. That's damn straight. And then, this is my favorite. Well, it's not my favorite. I kind of forgot about her. Remember, what's her name? Gretchen Whitmer, the nasty governor from Michigan. I know somebody who knows her. Whitmer's a real mean girl, real nasty mean girl. One of those, you know the type. I'm sure she's nice to children and small animals, but boy, she could be a mean girl in high school. The famous Michigan trial where they supposedly were going to kidnap the very unpopular governor. That never made any sense to me. This is one of those classic cases where if she were kidnapped, the ransomers would have paid money to get that person off their hands. That turned out to be a great big phony baloney. Two were just found not guilty, and another ended in a hung jury. That had BS written all over it. Looked like the FBI. The FBI, of all people, may have set some folks up, huh? Now, when has that happened before? Oh, boy. Some great people at that FBI, but a lot of kiss-ups, too. A lot of people intimidated by Democrat politicians. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I wish I had a better feel for it. I know a couple of agents. They shake their heads. I know the rank and file. They don't like what's happening to that once great and prestigious. The FBI comes to see you. I almost feel sorry for those guys. FBI. It used to mean something. It used to be like, wow, that's status. Wow, that's premier law enforcement. It's been so damaged. And James Comey, who said he wanted to protect the reputation of the FBI, that was his number one mission. It really shouldn't be when you think about it, but that was his number one mission, and he blew it. He damn near ruined the place. Gail in Staten Island, hello.
Good afternoon, Greg. I was listening to you much earlier about Orwellian, and I was just thinking, I was thinking a while ago, we are witnessing life imitating art. I feel like our entire administration is like the Richard Condon novel, which turned into a great movie, The Manchurian Candidate, because this whole administration, they're all brainwashed. And then, of course, there was Thomas Harris that wrote the novel Black Sunday about the dirigible crashing into the Super Bowl. But obviously there was a happy ending where in our United States, there was no happy ending when the Islamic jihadists crashed into the World Trade, the Pentagon, and Shanksville. I don't understand what's going on in this country. And as far as Northwell, now they're just jumping on the conglomerate bandwagon of Face Crook, Amazonian, and the rest of these big tech businesses.
Oh, I love what you called Facebook. Let's call them Face Crook. I love it. Did you make that up?
Yes, I did.
Oh, Face Crook. Well, I'm gonna borrow it for a little while, if you don't mind, Gail. I love it. Hey, what'd you say about that movie Black Sunday? I vaguely remember it. Was Burt Reynolds in it?
No. It was Robert Shore, Bruce Dern, I think.
And what happened? A blimp? They crashed a blimp into the Super Bowl?
Yeah, Bruce Dern was part of, they called it, I don't know if it was the Black Liberation Army or whatever, and they were going to crash it into the Super Bowl, Bruce Dern. So he was driving the dirigible, but they ended up going over. They crashed. It had a bomb in it. It was really good. He also wrote, Harris, all the Hannibal Lecter novels.
Hmm.
A great movie. You should try to look it up.
Yeah. Actually, that sounds like an interesting one. It's not exactly a kamikaze crashing into a stadium, a blimp, you know, 2 miles per hour. It's like,
yeah, but it had big bombs on it. It had a bomb on it with all types of nails attached to it. It would have been, you know, it was really good.
Yeah. I mean, very slow, a blimp. I guess they pulled it off. You can pull anything off with a good soundtrack. Anyway, great points. Face Crook. You got that, Mark Zuckerberg? Face Crook. I love it. Gail, thank you for calling. She's not wrong. Disagree with calling her on police. No. Do me a favor. Hey, Rich, what's going on? I got to introduce Rich. He's the new deputy assistant to the president of communications. What is your job here?
I am the executive producer in the afternoons.
I thought it was a bit more highbrow than that.
No, sorry.
All right. Well, you are one of my many supervisors here. And anyway, welcome. How long have you been here now?
Just over a year now. Well, actually, full time, just over a year. I've been
Wait a second. Now, why did I meet you like for the first time a month ago, max?
Because I was on the night shift.
Oh, all right.
I was working 4 to midnight.
I thought you were new. I was welcoming you to the station, making sure you were real. Oh, what a schmuck. They should have put out a memo about you.
Yeah, well,
they may have.
That's Matt's job.
So listen, where do you live?
I'm in Baldwin.
And how long have you been in radio?
30 years.
And where'd you start?
Right here at WABC, as a matter of fact.
Where was the station when you started?
2 Penn Plaza.
And what was your job? What was your first job?
They had a union back then. I was a summer relief engineer was the official title.
Now, why did you choose, of all the things to do, why radio?
I fell in love with it. Not back in college. I went to Hofstra, went down for an open house at the college radio station, WRHU, and from there it was,
RHU, well, what happened?
I went down, a buddy of mine, we went down there. He called me, as a matter of fact. He said, hey, you know, like everybody gets their start. Let's go down to the college radio station, have an open house. Let's, you know, me and you will get on the air. We'll do a show. You know, we'll do like some sort of talk show. We'll do sports, something like that. And then, so we went down there and I liked it. And I, stuck with it. He washed out. He didn't last there, and I stuck with it. Enjoyed, became program director.
But you were manager. You were actually had a show.
I was on the air a little bit, but mostly behind the scenes.
Now, why did you make the decision? Yeah, why behind the scenes, not on the air?
I just like the behind the scenes a little bit better. You know, in retrospect, it would have been maybe I should have been on the air, but I just like producing and
What do you mean by that in retrospect?
Well, now I could be like you if I had gone the same track as you. I could be, I could be famous like you. But
famous? Give me a break. How about? Maybe I could have worked 30 years uninterrupted like
right.
you.
You know,
right?
Well, I didn't work uninterrupted for 30 years. I did. I left the business for a little while.
What'd you do?
I was in the printing business.
What'd you print?
You name it, we printed it.
Was it Garden City Printers and Mailers by any chance?
No, it was not. Where? I know where that is, though.
Yeah, I worked there for a little while. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. I got to do something to rescue this interview.
What else would you like to know? I mean, I went there and I enjoyed it. And, you know, from there, I worked my way up, ran the college radio station, came in here, worked with all of the greats here. Bob Grant, Jay Diamond, Rush Limbaugh, Lynn Samuels.
Wait a second.
Curtis
Lynn
Lisa
Samuel.
Sliwa.
Lynn Samuels. The lawyer, the radical, the leftist.
Yeah, she was. Yeah,
she worked here.
Yeah,
what was she like? I heard she was.
She was a lot of fun.
No kidding. All right, nice
she was
person.
A lot of fun to work. Yes, very nice person.
So, what are your passions outside of work?
Outside of work,
yeah.
Love being outdoors, hiking, being in the country, going up to our home in the country, and you know, working on the farm, gardening, that sort of thing.
Very nice. Yes. Very nice. And you're also a classic rock fan.
Classic rock. Big classic rock fan.
What else about, tell me more about Baldwin. Did you grow up there?
I did not. I grew up in West Hempstead.
Right next door, basically.
Right next door, basically. You know. So, Baldwin's a great town still. You know, very involved in the church there.
Which church?
St. Christopher's.
I heard of St. Christopher's. We didn't go to St. Christopher's. We went to, oh my gosh, it's such a long time ago.
Well, you don't remember
second,
where you
I was
went.
In second grade. It was, we moved when I was second grade. Was it St. Sebastian's? Could it have been St. Sebastian? It was actually, the church we went to was in Roosevelt.
Roosevelt. I don't church there. We'll have to look that up.
So, all right. Well, look, anything I should know about the show? Anything you guys planning on doing with it anytime soon?
We're trying to get Valerie Biden on for next week.
Okay. That would be...
Matt, you saw the email.
Thank you. I can't believe you actually follow up on all these things.
Yeah, absolutely. That's my job.
Listen, you're absolutely... very organized
and
very skilled and very experienced, and I benefit from it every step of the way. So I thank you for that.
I appreciate working with you.
No, thank you, buddy. And all right, let's take a quick break. Let's hug it out, and we'll be right back.
This is Greg Kelly. To my friends in the construction business, if you've been injured on the job, make just one call to the Construction Accident Lawyers at the law offices of Darren T. Moore. With hundreds of five-star reviews, they fight for more justice for every client and have secured millions of dollars in compensation for New York construction workers. Call 888-444-ATTY. That's 888-444-2889 for a free consultation. More diligence, more persistence, and more justice. Prior results don't guarantee similar outcomes.
This is the Greg Kelly Show.
Well, you see these stories all the time in the Post, but I haven't seen one of this scope. California teacher arrested for allegedly molesting 7 students. Yikes. A California biology teacher has been arrested for allegedly molesting 7 students and sharing graphic photos online, authorities said. Anessa Paige Gower, 35 years old, is facing, 29 separate criminal counts over the alleged abuse that occurred when she was teaching at the Making Waves Academy, you think, in Richmond. The Costa District Attorney's Office said the victims told and witnesses told investigators that the abuse, which dates back to last year, included sex acts with the minors, inappropriate touching, and sharing sexually graphic photos. Authorities haven't revealed the age or gender of any of the victims, but the charter school caters to students in grades 5 through 12. Gower was taken into custody last Wednesday to Sacramento International Airport when she returned from a vacation in Hawaii. Welcome home. She is currently in custody in Richmond and is facing multiple child molestation charges. Making Waves chief executive said she was fired, blah, blah, blah. We're cooperating with the state investigation. We didn't. You hear about this more and more. You do. I mean, not 7, but I think it's all the phone. You can blow up your life with a phone. And you think you're just sitting there on a couch. You think you're just sitting there in traffic. You just... But no, that's like a remote control for the world, and it can wreak havoc in your world and the world of others. It's like a nuclear bomb we all have in our pockets. There's a lot of good you can do with it, unlike a nuclear bomb, but there's a lot of bad things you can do with it as well. You must be careful with it. Yikes, that is something else. It's just an allegation at this point, right? Just an allegation. Let's just see. Well, we take care of this. I want to tell you, oh, tonight I'm going to have a great guy on. He is the Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina. Now, I know that doesn't sound exciting. Oh, I got to get home. Why? The Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina is going to be on the Greg Kelly Show. Well, his name is Mark Robertson, and he's only been the Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina for a little while. In 2018, he was a guy working in a factory. He was just a guy working in a factory. And some things that were happening in his town were making him mad. And he went down to the town hall, and they were having one of those little public forums. And he spoke for about 4 minutes. And it was some of the most mesmerizing oration I've ever heard. He spoke about how furious he was that when some illegal act happens, something bad happens, like a mass shooting, they take it out on the law-abiding. They pass all these laws that penalize people like him, someone who's not breaking the law. And he did it much better than I ever could. Again, Mark Robertson, and that little moment went viral. I missed it. Things go viral every second of every day. I missed this particular viral video. He showed up the other night at the Trump speech, and Trump introduced him, and then he spoke. I'm like, who is this guy? I got to find out more. He said, 4 years ago, I was at a factory working on an assembly line. Today, I'm the North Carolina deputy governor, lieutenant governor. Anything can happen in America. So he's an impressive guy, Mark Robertson. I look forward to meeting him over the TV tonight. Let's see here. Muncie in New Jersey. Yes.
Hey, Greg. Yeah. Now, you're talking about Black Maternal Health Week. I think we should consider a Black Fetal Health Week. There's 649 abortions, Black abortions, every day. You know, if that shouldn't that be something that we should talk about? And per year, that's 236,885 abortions per year.
So,
fetal.
Yeah, when Roe v. Wade, when abortion was legalized, you know, there was a pretty vocal opposition coming from the Black Congressional Caucus because they saw this as
growing the population.
Right. They saw this as a way to, you know, they did not like it. And I understood. And they thought this was, you know, borderline genocidal. And I think that's something to discuss. What are the numbers for other groups? Do you know?
The numbers are much less, actually, significantly less.
Yeah.
And actually, you talk about Roe versus Wade. Since Roe versus Wade, total 54 million abortions. So that's 54 million fetuses that were, you know, their lives were ended.
It's crazy. And, you know, it's funny, though, when you talk about maternal health in today's lexicon, that is code for abortion rights. Often that's kind of mixed in. That's almost a given now, although not for much longer with the Supreme Court the way it is. We'll see. Muncie, thank you. Great point. And I should think about that. Larry in New Jersey. Yes, sir.
Hey, Greg, just real quick about child pornographers and downloaders of childhood. How do these people think they're not going to get caught? How do you think you're not going to get caught? It's insane.
You know, the dark web or something like that. They all think they, you know, there's a password or whatever. But yeah, no, everybody, you know, there's basically no anonymity online. If you want to find out who somebody is, you can. As a matter of fact,
right.
Somebody was giving me a hard time online, and just as an exercise, it's an intellectual exercise. I said, all right, who is this person? Because they know a few things about me. You know what I mean? And I'm like, and then they said something. I'm like, all right, not many people know that. How does this person know that? And I got to find out who this person is. So I did a little research, and guess what? I found out. So anything can be found out. And yes, you're playing with dynamite, again, with your phone, with the computer. That would be horrible. Think about where those images come from. They got to be manufactured somehow. They've got to be, you know, there's some kid somewhere being victimized so some guy can look at something on a computer. It is foul. It is all very foul. Thank you, Larry. Sarah in Long Island. Hello.
Hey, Greg. I spoke to you a few months ago about the book Front Desk that my school was having read to the fifth grade students. And I was going to Board of Ed meetings and speaking against CRT and speaking against all the mandates and standing up and advocating for our kids. And, you know, since then, there have been so many issues, so many problems with the school. And the superintendent has actually found a way to ban me. My children's mother, I have a 6-year-old and a 10-year-old. I'm banned from school district property for no reason. I have everything on video showing I did not wig out on anybody. It's my ideology that they needed to silence.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, were you showing up at inopportune times? Were you showing up on your own?
Nope. You didn't
get in anybody's faces, did you, Sarah? Come on.
Didn't get in anybody. This is what I mean. Somebody immediately assumes
Sarah,
that
Sarah, you sound like a nice person. You're calling me. I'm just checking up all the boxes.
I don't want to be like Sarah.
Sarah, some people would jump right on the bat. Sarah, that's ridiculous. God, we're going to call them out. Like, I just want to make sure everything, these are the questions that one might ask when I hear something like this. It's very terrible that this has happened, if it's happened.
It is. And I've been, this is what you said before. Why don't people speak up? This is why people don't speak up.
Well, wait a second. No. Wait, Sarah. I mean, you can wage your battle, your fight. You can do all the things that you want to do. You don't have to be on school grounds to do it. And I don't think those school board meetings.
I have to pick up my children. I have to pick up my kids at school.
How old are your kids?
You wouldn't let me go.
Wait a second. Now, is there a legal order? You got to pick up your kids from school, obviously. I'm just saying, number one, all the other stuff, all the things that you say you want to do that you should be doing, you can still do. All right? And you don't regret doing it, right? Do you?
I don't regret it, but I have a legal battle on my hands now. I'm finding a lawyer that I have to spend thousands of dollars to try to get access back to my kid's school. He wouldn't let me go to the sweetheart dance with my kindergartner and my fifth grader. And when I tell you
can you do me a favor? Hello?
Yeah.
All right. Look, stay on the line. We want to get your information, and we'll do a story and find out more, okay?
Yes. Perfect.
Fair enough? All right, great. Thank you.